Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast. My name is Davis Maddock. I'm joined by my guys, Peter Overzet and Patrick Crane. You might be listening to this on the Ship Chasing feed if they decide to put it on, up to them. But we are, of course, here to do our yearly preview and breakdown of the Scott Fishbowl and the associated satellite picks. Just kind of always the marking of the beginning of the fantasy football season for a lot of people. For a lot of people, it'll probably be the first draft of a managed league that they do all year. So we're pumped. We all have already made a pick. You guys apparently all decided to join the 101 club. I did not, but I think I made a mistake, Pat. I think I should have taken the 101.
Really? Okay. Why? You were like pretty confident that you didn't want the 101. What's changed?
Because last year, Mahomes' ADP was the 104. He was on average going at the 104 because McCaffrey was going ahead, Kelsey was going ahead, and then who was the second running? Was it Saquon last year? Was he the big? Yeah. So Saquon or Michael Thomas was going some of the time ahead. So I ended up taking Kyler Murray at the 104, which I think is close, but I expect Mahomes to be better than him. But Pete did the right thing and got Mahomes.
Murray just went 102 in mine. So my thought was it like in if there wasn't the kind of massive penalties for bad quarterbacks and the good quarterbacks weren't going to fly off the shelves and you didn't have third round reversal. Like I think, but I just think you could really get in a tough spot in these rooms. I mean, Davis, you just told us Aaron Rodgers just went eighth overall. Like Pat, you could be looking at some really gross options and reaches.
I don't think so. I went with Christian McCaffrey after reviewing where the ADP pockets were for the rest of the quarterbacks. Joe Burrow's usually there at the 212 and not like sometimes there. He's almost always there, it looks like, in these mocks. And the other thing is that in general with Scott Fishbowl, I think the play is that the mock drafts are going to be overly tilted to the Scott Fishbowl scoring and the actual drafts are going to be closer to like regular drafts. So betting on quarterback values to fall, I think is a sharp bet because I can probably like if I get, I mean, Russell Wilson sometimes gets close to falling to the 212. If I can get Russell Wilson at the 212 and pair him with the CMC, I think that's a smash compared to Mahomes with whatever running back I'd get at 212. So it's a risk. I could get locked out of quarterback, but assuming I can grab a quarterback that I like at 212, I can get a guy probably like Trevor Lawrence on the next turn. Even, you know, I got two picks at the end of the fourth, beginning of the fifth. Trevor Lawrence is usually there. And then at the following turn, Lance or Fields is often there. So I can grab one of those guys. Now I've got three guys and I'm done at quarterback. And all of those guys I expect to play efficiently.
Yeah, but you're just saying that your plan involves using one of your first five picks on a player who will not be in your starting lineup that often.
Well,
that's leaky as hell, dude. That is a huge flaw in the plan. You can't do that. You will have to have Andy Dalton, you know, Trubisky, Taysom, someone like that will have to be your third quarterback. I think.
Yeah, you're right. You know what I'm going to do is I'm going to just take Lawrence and be done. You're right. I can't do that in the next turn. But if I don't get Lawrence, then I'll take Fields or Lance the following turn. And then
Pat, I would almost say from what I was seeing, and I was hearing Fish talk about this on the Rotoviz pod too, is there are some guys like a Carson Wentz, some quarterbacks that we think could maybe have some like strong efficient seasons that are going way late. It's almost like if you are going to punt the quarterback there, like punt that gap and then catch up on your league mates, either with some tight end points there, elite wide receivers, and then just get three or four guys super late and hope a couple of them have really good seasons.
The reason I didn't take quarterback is not because I don't value the quarterback in this format. It's super, super valuable, but it's just that
CMC will be, if he plays 17 games, he will be the number one scoring player.
Yeah. So I want that. And I think I can make that up. I think I can take that and pair it with good quarterback play, not great quarterback play. I don't want to just completely punt quarterback. I don't think that's true. I don't think it's
true. So the problem with not taking a quarterback with your first overall selection, you know, some teams it will work out and some teams it won't. But the problem is like, okay, you said, you know, Joe Burrow there at the 212. I would make it like minus 250 that Burrow has multiple games in the negatives, that there are games where the Bengals are just getting beat up. He throws a pick six, takes a couple, like, because the negative points are so massive. Like, you don't even really realize it, how many incompletions guys throw, but the incompletions are a big deal. Like, if you throw 45 passes and complete 20 of them, you have to have like a sick game to get into like the 15, 20 point range. And I noticed this last year. My quarterbacks were Mahomes, Kyler, and Justin Herbert last year. And I didn't even, my best running back that I had all season was J.K. Dobbins. And I couldn't even start him for like the first 6 weeks of the season. But I went 9-0 before I lost, just because I was getting like about 90 points a week out of my quarterbacks. Like, it was a huge edge to have quarterbacks who were never having bad games.
Yeah, I think taking guys like Wentz and stuff are generally, that's, I don't want those guys.
I don't want to do that.
Yeah, I want to be done at quarterback early, because the guys who you normally think, like, I remember Garoppolo last year being someone I wanted to avoid, just because, like, he, you know, he throws picks and throws, and Wentz, I think, is the type of guy this year. Hurts actually is someone that I like a lot less here than I normally do.
I want Mac Jones in this. I want Mac Jones to be the third quarterback sitting on my bench for most of the season until he starts.
By the way, Burrow had one negative week last year.
Yeah, but he only played 10 weeks, 11 weeks.
Yeah, he played 10 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so we have the real-time ADP data coming in right now, and it looks like people are mostly kind of splitting that. Mahomes has an ADP of 1.6 and McCaffrey 1.9. And then the next pairing is Josh Allen and Travis Kelce, both have an ADP of 3.5. So people are struggling with this decision with Mahomes and McCaffrey for sure.
I don't think you can make a wrong choice. I think the third round reversal weights it to the Mahomes side. If it was not third round reversal and you got a you got to double tap 212, 301, I would say it was McCaffrey would be the better pick, because you will get at that 212 turn, as Pat was mentioning, you could maybe get Russell Wilson if your league tilts a little bit that way. But I mean, you know, Ryan Tannehill, Joe Burrow, even Matthew Stafford, I think actually is a good fit for this format, because I think this will be the first time in his career he'll be playing in that more West Coast style offense with, you know, quick throws and things like that.
Great point. So
I was just looking at FF engineer Kevin O'Brien has his mock draft ADP up. And yeah, I mean, the guys that you're getting at ADP of around 24, Tom Brady, Tannehill, Austin Eckler, Burrow, Diggs. I mean, you can really go whatever direction you want there.
I can't. I have to take a quarterback.
Yeah, there. You can't. Right. Where I think it does give you a little bit more flexibility when you take Mahomes there, and that you can go in any direction at that.
And especially because Mahomes is going to give you so many points. I actually think with Mahomes, you could take a Carson Wentz or whatever a little bit later. Like, I think you can stomach that a little bit more.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the big thing about this format, and I saw the aforementioned Kevin O'Brien, FF engineer, cool site he's got going here. You know, he was making the point that I think he said he took his first wide receiver in round 9 last year, and it was Julian Edelman, and he still made the playoffs and everything. But this actually is the zero running back format. This is a format where you can get away with 11 points from your running back one in a given week. Now it is only half point PPR for wide receivers, but for high volume wide receivers specifically, guys like DeAndre Hopkins, guys like Julio Jones, guys like, Calvin Ridley, et cetera, the first down bonus ends up really coming into play with guys like that. But also, I mean, we just know wide receivers score more points than running backs. Like, you start to get into like pick 62, Mike Evans versus Myles Gaskin. Like, that's not even close. Mike Evans is going to score more points than Myles Gaskin.
Yes. The other thing that I think, like, year after year after year in Scott Fishbowl that has been an edge is that you have to fill a ton of starting roster spots.
Yes. Yep.
And if you take guys who bust, it kills you. So kills you need you. to, you need to hit on like almost all your picks. And so in order to do that, you should be taking wide receivers where it's just so much more likely to hit. And then especially, as you mentioned with the ADP, because of the scoring, you're taking guys like Mike Evans. Mike Evans is going to have a good season. Maybe he doesn't have an amazing season. He's going to have a good season if he doesn't get hurt. Miles Gaskin, he might not be a starting running back by week eight. Like there's the risk of this guy just completely busting is so much higher at the running back position pretty much throughout the entire draft because of how much the top wide receivers get pushed down. So
well, in another pro thing for zero RB-ish builds in this format is we have the extra roster spots. We're going to get a lot more information throughout August, and there's a waiver wire run before the season starts. So you can stockpile a lot of these camp guys. Like we were just talking on my show about Savon Ahmed. Like if something were to happen to Gaskin, like during the preseason, like you now have all this information to work with. You're not going to see those kind of big information.
James Robinson was not drafted in any Scott Fishbowl teams last year. He was only a waiver wire pickup. I got Logan Thomas in that week zero mm-hmm. waiver wire run, started him all year. This is a tight end. So tight ends get an extra 0.5 PPR and an extra 0.5 per first down. And then even Darrell Williams was not drafted. It was, DeAndre Washington was being drafted. Like you can laugh at Darrell Williams, but I started Darrell Williams a couple times and he grinded out some like 9-point performances for me at running back too. Like, The way I am drafting in this was Leone's point. I heard him make it for the first time. Just consider your running back too, like your seventh starting spot, like your wide receiver seven, because that's really how it works out. Unless you get extraordinarily lucky and, you know, you draft a Derrick Henry and you pick up James Robinson, like very few teams are going to be starting two very quality running backs and having wide receivers contributing points.
Yeah. And like, I don't know. I guess I don't know in terms of this whole kicker thing, right? Because people are going to be starting kickers. So the flex floor is now a little bit higher where everyone's going to be scoring some
points. I think a lot
points.
Higher because not everyone's going to be doing the kickers. So the kickers people are going to be starting are going to be like Justin Tucker, Harrison Butker. Like they're going to be good kickers who average double digit points a game, I think.
Yeah. So does that help or hurt in terms of the zero running back instruction? Because it helps.
Yeah, because you let's say you're in bye week wide receiver injury hell. Like week seven, I think is a horrible bye week. Like I think it's maybe the Cardinals and another team the Cardinals and the Steelers are our week seven bye. So let's say you draft DeAndre Hopkins, Chase Claypool, and another one of your wide receivers, like Will Fuller pulls his hammy and you have Will Fuller, instead of starting Darrell Williams in your flex that week, you can start Justin Tucker. And that's like a bang, 11 points.
Yeah, and so Matt Spencer over at RotoViz did some good research on this. And the other thing is similar to the QB penalties, like it's -3 for a missed field goal, -1 for an extra point. So like these aren't just total runaway smashes. And he looked at their kind of positional scoring, you know, like historically, and he said in 2020 in this scoring format, just three kickers scored enough points to justify being weekly starters. And so he was saying with kickers being notoriously difficult to project, they still just aren't worth drafting. However, if you look at weekly scoring, the position is extremely volatile. I will be streaming kickers in my last flex spot, particularly when I am projected to lose for the ceiling play.
But that bails out guys who missed on running backs is what I'm saying. I don't know that it actually helps us, because if you draft a bunch of running backs, they miss, and then you can stream kicker for one of those flex spots that actually catches you up to, we're trying to dominate the flex. So I think it might actually,
but we're trying to dominate the flex with wide receiver, and those guys are trying to fill into our running back slot.
Yeah. And where that point breaks down is what is like the realistic, like 75th percentile outcome for a streamed kicker, like 15 points, maybe. Does that sound, I mean, but like a wide receiver who catches six passes and a touchdown, like you have a KJ Hamler week or whatever, like you're like the ceiling of a wide receiver in the flex is just going to be higher because they have access to more points.
And I think the point will really break down, hopefully, because I don't want this to happen, obviously, But I think it could really help us if people are actually drafting these kickers. Because if you're drafting the kickers,
people
you're
will
giving
draft
up so much upside.
I guarantee people are drafting kickers.
I thought this was like a bit that people would be drafting kickers, but it does not
appear. I will guarantee Harrison Butker, Justin Tucker, Will Lutz, you know, just Younghoe Koo, like these dudes will be drafted about where we start getting excited about running backs, like Ramondre Stevenson and Ty Johnson. People are taking kickers instead of those guys. I'll guarantee that right now.
Doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
Because the guaranteed point mentality that works at every position. Like, you know, the guaranteed touches argument that people use to justify drafting Josh Jacobs and Kareem Hunt and things like that. That is what they will see in their heads instead of drafting zero running back guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's a natural thing that happens too. And like, you know, this field is massive. There are more casual players drafting, and what happens in more casual leagues, a lot of times the quarterbacks get pushed up because they start to look like the more attractive names relative to the super deep sleepers that don't get as much pub. So I do think like the kickers at certain points will be more attractive than some of the deep dive guys we're going after here as well. So I think kickers will be overdrafted, and also just because of the novelty of the whole thing of them being involved in this in the first place.
Well, then maybe this whole kicker thing is a big boon because it will allow us to draft the guys that we need to hit the upside to make these zero running back teams really work, because everyone else is just avoiding them, taking the kicker. You know, even if you have, you know, one or two more guys fall into your lap because of the kickers being drafted, that could be huge.
Yeah. I mean, I think that is like, and this is just true every year in the Scott Fishbowl. It's like people just like, you know, they meme out their like 17th, 18th, 19th, 20th round selections. Like, you know, Scott always puts like fantasy players in the pool. Like he puts like Uncle Rico in the pool. He puts, I think Barry Sanders he put in the pool once. And like people meme out those selections. But I mean, and I know this is so not in the spirit of Scott Fishbowl to like take it super seriously, but I always do. I'm always like really debating it, my 19th, 20th round selection. I was starting last year, my 20th, I started DeMarcus Robinson twice last year, who I took in the 20th round.
Has anyone ever started DeMarcus Robinson as many times as you have?
No, no, but I'm the most Chiefs dude of all time. And so I think Andy Isabella, I started for a week too, who I took in the 19th round.
Well, and just the other kind of simple point about for not drafting kickers at any point is they have zero chance to appreciate in value. There's nothing that is going to happen where more like even like a quarterback could get a free agent signing or something, like boost their projection by a little bit. But like that is not happening with kickers. Like take these guys that have a chance, like you said, the Ahmed or last year's James Robinson, who if something breaks right, could jump 10 rounds in value.
This is the year where you needed to have Justin Tucker.
Oh, God. I hope not. I'll lose.
So I think we should talk about some of the most fantasy-friendly offenses for this format in particular. You remember the team we really debated about last year, Pat, was the Titans, where I was like, they're just not going to run enough plays to be here. And part of that ended up being true. They didn't run a ton of plays, but everyone on that team smashed, right? I guess other than Jonnu, he was fine. But Corey Davis had a big season for him. A.J. Brown had it. Like, and of course, I was in on A.J. Brown. But, you know, Derrick Henry led the NFL in scrimmage yards. Ryan Tannehill was amazing. But I think there are a couple offenses who are going to be a little bit better for this format than they would be normally. One of them is obviously Arizona. And this was even true with Kyler got hurt last year and stopped running. But when he stopped running, he just started completing like 37 passes a game, you know, 4 yard outs to DeAndre Hopkins. Cause remember DeAndre Hopkins also went on that touchdown drought, but in this scoring, he was fine because he was catching like 11 passes a game. So that's the most
I think
obvious
Cliff
team.
Kingsbury may have been involved in the Scott Fishbowl scoring settings a little bit, because it's very beneficial to the horizontal raid.
It is. I hate to say this, but a team that downgrades a little bit in this is the Baltimore Ravens, right? Lamar probably will not complete, you know, maybe 400 passes, maybe 350 in like a really good season. That is, I mean, he right away, right there, he loses 100 points to Mahomes, for example, just on completions alone.
Well, it might hurt Lamar, but I actually don't think it hurts the – I think it helps the Ravens because you're getting first downs, right? Like,
yeah.
With the Ravens, I think this – for the skill position players, if you're in a good offense, an offense that's putting up points and converting first downs, like, that's better than being an offense that's relying a little bit more on garbage time and kind of the typical fantasy volume. So I think it's probably an offense that scores points and plays efficiently – is one that you might want to boost up the skill players in. Like, that would be the lesson of the Titans, I think.
Yeah. I mean, is that the way you view it, Peter?
Yeah, I think so with that. Yeah, I'm torn on how to handle teams like them, but I definitely prefer the high volume pass offenses. The whole thing with the Ravens in general, though, is they're like a fragile team for projecting, right? Like, part of the stuff we're hoping for them is that they do have more pass plays, and then that's what's going to make them a more dynamic offense. I think it's just probably even more important in a format like this that they do have a subtle shift, or not even a subtle shift, but a shift in how they're playing relative to last year.
Yeah. I think Carolina, another team, not necessarily pace of play, but because they only complete passes to four guys. Like,
right.
DJ Moore, Robbie Anderson, Christian McCaffrey, and then, you know, we're kind of hoping Terrace Marshall. In terms of, okay, what about any dead zone running backs interesting here to you guys? Like, because the dead zone of running backs is going to be pushed back a little bit. Like, Josh Jacobs will go much later in this. You know, ETN will go later than this. You know, and it's going to be weird decisions. Like, that's where you end up with this, is you end up in very weird spots. Like, you're debating like Jamar Chase versus Dallas Goedert because of the way the scoring works out, because the tight ends get the bonus.
The thing is though, is that yes, by ADP, the dead zone is further, but the dead zone more relates to the opportunity cost relative to the wide receivers going there. Like, I'm looking at the mock draft ADP. Josh Jacobs is going a couple of picks ahead of CeeDee Lamb. Like, you're never in a million years catching me drafting Josh Jacobs over CeeDee Lamb.
And that's part of the reason why I wanted McCaffrey, is because, like, I don't even want to, I just want to just skip right past that whole part of the draft. Like, the whole part of the draft, I just don't want anything to do with it. And I can scoop just the latest dart throw flyers and play running back to like wide receiver seven, like you were saying, Leone's saying to do. Like, that's the real advantage of having McCaffrey, where you feel like I'm still going to beat you across two running back positions. But I'm going to be spending very little draft capital.
With McCaffrey or even like Dalvin Cook, I would be willing to throw him in there. I think that you can just not take a running back. Like, I literally think you could wait to take a running back until the 12th round, Pat.
That's what I'm going to do. Yeah. Yeah. I think almost have to do that, because you need to have upside swings, guys who are going to be filling those flex spots. You know, you're going to feel really good about it. And I'm also going to need to make sure I get my quarterbacks. So I'm not going to feel as good about my wide receivers as I'd even like to, because of quarterback and tight end and needing to prioritize those. So running back too. I mean, the 12th round might be early.
Pete, what are your thoughts on what to do about tight end? Cause obviously we're all in a similar position picking at the front here. Obviously none of us took Kelsey. Probably when we're all up in the second round, it's going to feel, I think, a little bit early for any of, because I imagine Kittle will go before.
I think Kittle's gonna be gone.
Yeah. So is it just like, just try and find the breakout dude? Like, I think like, I don't really want to take Pitts in this format. Like, and streaming tight end in this, it is kind of possible, because anecdotal observation on Scott Fishbowl, people give up kind of early. Like they will give up on waivers. So kind of like by like week five, your Dalton Schultz is like, you can kind of squeeze those guys through. Like, you don't have to fight to get Dalton Schultz on your team.
Yeah. I mean, looking at, so, you know, with Pat and I picking from 101, we're then picking at pick 36 and 37. So based on the mock draft ADP, that's right on the nose of where Kyle Pitts would be. And then you could also pretty much have TJ Hawkinson or Mark Andrews. If you're there, the opportunity cost is you're having to take those guys over DK Metcalf, over AJ Brown, Justin Jefferson, all those alphas. I could see myself though, grabbing one of those tight ends, even like a Hawkinson in this format, and just hoping he's this year's Waller with a ton of volume and, you know, finishes as like a early second round type ADP value. I think that might be something I would, in, you know, consider, because then I'm not having to devote the 3 to 4 spray and pray late draft strategy roster spots to tight end.
Yeah. Wasting roster spots on tight end, especially in the preseason, where, I mean, this is just good advice for all drafts, but you should just be trying to use as many of these back end roster spots on running backs who can appreciate as possible. Like, I do feel like using 4 roster spots on a tight end is, it's going to be bad. Like, you're not going to want to be holding, Jared Cook probably is like a good target in this, because no one's excited about him. I've done a complete 180 on him ever since Friedman made me come to Jesus with Jared Cook.
Friedman talked you into Jared Cook.
He really did. He really talked me into 34-year-old Jared Cook.
I'm with it. He's not a guy I'm going outside of my, going out of my way to draft, but I think he's perfectly fine there, which actually I was just going to talk about, you know, best ball and stacking. Where are you guys at with the idea of stacking this year? That became a conversation point last year for basically the first time in these tournaments, but I think it's something we should discuss again.
I mean, all of my plays that ended up working out in this format last year were as a result of stacks, and I'm going to be doing the same thing this year, 100%.
Yeah, Davis, I think it makes sense.
Is it really cold in your, or sorry, I saw the smoke coming. Is that your vape?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I was like, are you, I'm glad it's your vape and not that you're like in a freezing cold room. Cause I thought that was like,
it is super cold in my basement though. Sorry, the AC works much better down here than it does upstairs. a little bit of trivia for the folks about my new house.
Okay.
Hey, what stacks are you trying to target out of this draft position?
Well, I mean, That's the thing too, where I'm not gonna reach a couple rounds for it. I mean, if I have Mahomes, like, we're already in that weird territory where I probably, like, in managed leagues, the guys like DeMarcus Robinson and Pringle and Powell, who have been taking on underdog and best ball drafts, are way less attractive to me.
Yes.
In this format. So I mean, like, I'm not getting Kelsey, I'm not getting CEH. Like, if I get Hardman at a viable point in the draft, I'll definitely break a tie in his favor, but Mahomes is a tough one.
Mahomes is tough. I am hoping, I think, so I just took Kyler at the 104. I am hopeful that I am able to get DeAndre Hopkins. I think I should be able to get DeAndre Hopkins. It would be a reach at the 209. I mean, do you think I try and hold on and get Hopkins with the with 33 overall, the 309? Cause that's very close at Kevin's ADP.
I do. I think you try to see if you can get him at a value, because you also have Rondale Moore that you can get with
Kyler. And Kirk. AJ Green.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
can't believe I just said AJ Green.
At least 3 guys that you can pair with them.
I think
Moore's probably starting for you every week in this format.
Yeah.
Kyler's almost an ideal guy from the stacking perspective, because you have so many outs throughout the draft to get. Mm-hmm. Like, Nuke, Rondell, and Kirk are all guys I get excited to stack Kyler with at their respective prices.
Yeah, so I probably wouldn't force the Nuke one, since you do have those other outs.
The one that is, I think, pretty tough in this, I mean, I think Aaron Rodgers is pretty tough, but also think Justin Herbert, because you're not going to want to, I don't think you're going to want to take Keenan Allen where he goes in this. I mean, I just am never a Keenan Allen guy. And then I guess it's honestly Jared Cook is who you're looking at as like the optimal Justin Herbert stack.
I've never really been on Mike Williams, but
yeah, I just am not really a Mike Williams guy. And he goes at I don't know. I mean, 138 ADP, I guess, seems about fair for him in this format.
Yeah.
It really depends on when and where you take your third quarterback. If you are taking a third quarterback early, you really do leave yourself up against it, because you just sacrificed, I don't know, 200 expected points in your lineup for a guy who your guys don't get hurt. So hopefully you only are starting him twice.
Well, yeah. So I want to think through this third quarterback thing a little bit more, because I really would like to have Lance or Fields I think those guys have such big ceilings. I think both could play efficiently. I mean, I think Lance could play hyper efficiently. So you're not like, you're not dealing with the, some of the downside of waiting on quarterback if you go with those guys, but then are you just dead if they don't start soon enough? Cause you're going to be what? You're going to be probably playing like Sam Darnold or Carson Wentz.
Lance feels very fraught in this format.
Because both those guys are going around pick 85, Fields and Lance. And so then, Pat, looking at where we're picking, that's right on our 7-8 turn, pick 84 and 85. So, I mean, here again, like Davis said, it's potentially a starter that you're not going to have in your starting lineup right out of the gate. I think there's ways to survive that. And I think there's ways that Lance is a guy that you have to have to win Scott Fishbowl. There's definitely paths to that happening. It's just, can you make up for that later? Or is a seventh round pick too much opportunity cost?
Even like Zach Wilson, looking at him, like he's still going right behind Deebo Samuel and ahead of Tyler Boyd, Jerry Jeudy. Like there's still pretty big opportunity cost, but maybe he's Wilson, more interesting because you know you're getting 17 starts.
Yeah, well, I would say for this format specifically, I would maybe even be a little bit more interested there at that cost, because Wilson's the backup option for the Jets is James Morgan, I think. Like
they're hoping, the beats are like praying that they trade for Nick Foles, because they genuinely do not have a backup quarterback right now. Like it's dire. So there's just no threat to Zach Wilson starting 17 games.
Yeah, no, there is no threat at all. So through the first round of there's been 9 picks in mine, and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of the first 9 picks were all quarterbacks. Like I feel like people learned the lesson from the scoring last year that you need one of these very good quarterbacks. Like that, like there
not
was
everyone
a significant...
learned that lesson, Davis.
I have no issue. I have no issue with McCaffrey, but there is no way there. Like I feel most comfortable in all of these starts with a good quarterback as your first pick.
This is, to me, it is a little bit of like, show me you understand how this scoring works, because that, like, if you take McCaffrey and then your room doesn't get it, you're going to smash. And I guess like I'm exposing myself to some downside here, but this is like a huge, huge field that you do need to kind of eventually land.
All right, let's somehow. Who's in your draft? Who are the idiots in your draft? They're going to mess this one up, Pat.
Well, I'm not going to call out anyone specifically, but you know who you are. No, I don't know. I actually don't know the people in my draft. I'm sure they're very sharp. But I'm just saying, like, if you're going into this, you just want to see. And the other thing is that it could be a little bit like we sometimes see with wide receiver in the FFPC drafts, where even if guys take them early, like they might take one wide receiver early, but then they're like, I'm good there. Now I don't need to do this anymore. Where to me, the advantage in Scott Fishbowl is be done at quarterback early.
Yes.
Don't be getting into like those back end quarterbacks essentially don't exist. Like they're not in the player pool. So you need to be getting your two top guys in a really good range, or have like a well thought out plan.
Where you get yourself in trouble, like you can literally see it in the ADP, is Amari Cooper, wide receiver 18, and then the next two picks are Carr and Tua. When you are forcing yourself because of how you started your draft to take Derek Carr over Amari Cooper, that is where you find yourself in trouble, because that is just not, Carr doesn't have the upside to win you anything. And at that point, you are better off trying to cobble together like Taylor Heineke and Andy Dalton stats at that point, I think.
And the other thing too, I was talking to Scott, and like the whole point of this scoring system is so that there's no specific advantage for any one position. Like, you know, Scott's made the point, the whole reason PPR scoring became a thing was because the bell cow running backs of the olden days were just lapping every wide receiver in points. So that helped balance it out. He's tried to create a scoring system that perfectly balances this out. So the real kind of advantages are drafting in the right value pockets of the draft and capitalizing when your league mates are reaching to fulfill positional requirements. And so I think setting yourself up for that optionality, that flexibility to take advantage of the soft pockets of the draft is really the only way to kind of actually gain points on the field in the draft.
Yeah, so I know my room, they're not letting these elite quarterbacks fall. Like the Russ thing is probably very, very unlikely to happen. I expect that they'll scoop him up. But if I can get Burrow and then Lawrence, like, I think I'm fine. I think I'm probably more than fine. And so I guess, like, show me that you're not going to let me do that. Show me that you're not going to let me get quarterback, so I feel really good about a 212 and 312.
So what's your plan if there is not quarterbacks you like there? What is your plan if your room – so, like, let's – for who's QB12 here in this ADP? So let's say before you get up at 212, Stafford is gone and Joe Burrow is gone. Like, what is your or even Jalen Hurts. Let's say Jalen Hurts is gone. Then do you just say
– What about Tannehill? Tannehill there?
Yeah, I mean, I think worst case scenario, there's probably one quarterback you like at 212. But again, remembering you're not picking again until.
Yeah, so I only need one. I only need one. That's the thing about the third round reversal too, is that, like, I would prefer that my other pick is at also 301 instead of 312. But because it's not, I just need one of these guys to fall and then I'll feel pretty good. And then, you know, Lawrence, I'm assuming will be there at the next turn. If he's not, I'll probably not force quarterback there and go quarterback at the next turn. And that's where you get into, like, do you take the Lance Fields and pair that with the gross quarterback? Or do you try to go with the Zach Wilson? Which might, you might even be able to push that to the next turn.
I think Zach Wilson is the guy for your build who makes the most sense personally, because I mean, he certainly has a lot of downside, right? Because LOL Jets, like, who knows what's going to happen, but at least you are not forcing, like, that. If you take Trey Lance, I think you have to burn an extra pick on a quarterback you don't love just because the starts are going to get so thin.
The other thing I think that's helpful for people who, and obviously this year is a little different because of the scoring format, but talking about what is readily available or most easy to get on the waiver wire, because I do feel like some of these positions have been viable. Like, ironically, like, quarterback and tight end streamers do seem to pop up with decent regularity to the point that I think it's worth discussing.
I mean, we have entered into a new era of how quarterback play goes. Like, in 2019, I think it was like 52 quarterbacks started a game. I don't know the exact numbers from last season because I'm doing less writing this year, which means my research is a little bit different. But I do know that quarterback starters come up more than you are thinking this early in the offseason. Like, you know, there was Andy Dalton was a huge waiver wire claim last year. You know, didn't really end up working out. Big Ben is 39. We had Taysom Hill and Jameis come up as waiver wire bids last year. We had Tua come up as a guy who was drafted and then got dropped. Justin Herbert was not drafted in every league. Like, there is a little bit more there at quarterback than you are thinking in your head as you're drafting right now.
And it is the thing too, where I know in general, people with super flex, like, everyone loves that idea of having three solid starters. And I think, especially with the Mahomes build, I'm going to be far more willing to go Mahomes, maybe an upside guy, like one of the rookies we've discussed, and then play the waiver wire for my third kind of QB, just knowing that those are going to be available and I don't want to waste other valuable picks on that third QB that's not going to make my starting lineup.
Yeah, to me, the ideal build is two quarterback and stop.
Yeah.
Because the opportunity cost is so high for those quarterbacks. And Davis was talking about the negative weeks. Like, yeah, Burrow had a negative week. Aaron Rodgers had a negative 13-point week. Like,
yep.
The good guys are scoring in the negatives from time to time. So the bad quarterbacks are going to be scoring the negative, like, a good amount. And so it's like, it gets to the point where,
like,
actually,
like, how many negative weeks for Jared Goff, honestly?
Yeah. Like, I don't know, like 40% of his weeks might be negative. It could be,
it's
really
going to be
bad.
Yeah.
So at that point, you actually, it's not even optimal necessarily to be starting him. And so then it, like, you're giving up a really good wide receiver to draft him in the first place. I think you're better off just saying, like, I'm probably dead if, or at least really scrambling if one of my two early quarterbacks gets hurt, but this is a GPP. So I think that's the way to build.
And I even like it, it makes you feel shitty when you have the three good quarterbacks. Cause like I said, I took Justin Herbert in the 16th round as my third quarterback last year, but I literally started him twice. I literally started him when Mahomes had a bye and when Kyler had a bye, because I was, even though Herbert was like crushing every single week, I was like, I cannot bench my first and third round picks for Justin Herbert. Like, it just does. Yeah. And that's, again, it's where you get in a weird mental space. Cause right now I assume you guys are kind of having the same brain rewiring stuff as me, where it's like, oh, we just have drafted like six best ball teams a day for the last 2 months. And now we're having to think about like, oh shit, when am I actually going to start this guy?
Yeah, it is. And that's the shift too, of like, in the one position I was going to say on the waiver wire that I actually find historically the hardest is finding wide receivers that can enter your starting lineup and actually give you the ceiling. Like, sure, you can find the random Adam Humphries slot plug and play guy, but like, you're not getting anyone with a ceiling. And I don't want the DeMarcus Robinsons in that. Like, I want to have 6 to 8 jacked up wide receivers that I'm drafting like rounds 4 through 11.
Like physically jacked up?
Yes, I would prefer them to be in decent shape. From my experience, the wide receivers that aren't in shape aren't as good.
With 20 rounds and with some teams just not contributing on the waiver wire and just locking their rosters after they start out 0-4 or whatever, which again, I get it. It's a free league. Everyone has a life. I'm not shaming anyone. If I start out 0-5, I'm probably not doing waivers in week 6 either. With all of those things, it like 100 wide receivers or more are going to go in your draft. The only wide receiver I remember last season making a huge difference as an ad was Travis Fulgham. I do not remember that many other wide receivers as waiver wire ads.
Keelan Cole is about as best, you know, that's as good as it gets. You get Keelan Cole, you start him a couple times. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. I would much rather have my last 5 to 6 picks be running back lottos that I can easily cut, and just know that I have a bunch of wide receiver one and wide receiver twos that I'm going to be able to start for the whole season to round out my flex spots.
And some tight ends. Some tight ends.
For sure.
But mostly running backs.
Also too, like, I guess this is where we could have our Zach Ertz versus our Mo Alley Cox and OJ Howard guys, but like, there are paths to, you know, you're trying to bink the guy who can become a top 5 tight end with some of these dart throws. And maybe it's the same thing with the running backs, right? Where we have different textured running backs. You got your James Whites, you have your pure handcuffs. Like, you get a Zach Ertz, you get a Mo Alley Cox, just give yourself outs to production and upside.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really like the James White, Giovanni Bernard style guys in this format. Cause I know those guys are not going to appreciate, like, Jerick McKinnon maybe would have a chance to appreciate, right? If Clyde Edwards-Helaire gets banged up in training camp or something.
If his legs come back to life.
Yeah. Or Marlon Mack, right? Jonathan Taylor gets banged up, something like that. You know, Marlon Mack is a guy who can appreciate. But I do really love Leone's idea of your second running back. Just think of that guy as your 7th skill position starting player. Like, I do think that is pretty strong. And just having guys who you can start at running back too, who are like not drawing dead. Like, I remember a couple times last season I was up against teams like just who were starting running backs who sit like were drawing dead to get points, like, you know, your Matt Breidas and things like that. And like, because this league is so deep, you do end up there. So just having someone like James White or Nyheim Hines or something is pretty valuable.
That's a good point. Yeah. I think super late, you know, I like guys who are kind of in more ambiguous situations and could also obviously benefit from injury, because everyone can benefit from injury. But like, you know, I could imagine us all getting really hyped about Javian Hawkins in another month because of like training camp reports.
You mean Cordarrelle Patterson?
Or Cordarrelle Patterson, maybe. That would be so fun.
You know who it's going to be, guys. I'm telling you, it's going to be Quadre Olison. That's where the drumbeat is starting. I'm not even kidding either.
Sigmund Bloom has been telling me about Quadre Olison every time there's been a running back in the Falcons backfield for the entirety of Quadre Olison's career. Like, because I'll always tweet something about Brian Hill, and then he'll be like, don't forget about Quadre Olison. I'm like, well, shit, I can't, I guess.
The other guy, I don't know. Are you guys into Ty Johnson at all? He's free. We don't know the running back depth chart really there.
I had to talk you into Ty Johnson.
Okay. This is one of the, I like this. Now I'm trying to talk you back into him.
I just think it's going to pretty it, like the writing's on the wall that this is going to be a gross three-way committee.
Why gross? Because, San Francisco's like not any, gross.
What? Which one?
San Francisco, the same system. It's not gross. We want those guys.
You don't want the third guy in a running back committee. Who's your third guy? Who's your third guy right now for San Francisco that you're referencing?
Well, like San Francisco, we were getting startable weeks out of Jeff Wilson.
No, I'm talking this year. Everyone likes Sermon and Mostert. Are you caping for Gallman?
If Jeff Wilson was on IR for the rest of the season, I would cape for Gallman.
See, that's my point. In a worse offense, you're caping for the Gallman.
Yeah.
Wait, why is that your point? What do you mean?
What is there to get excited about the third running
back? Because we don't know he's the Gallman. The one guy's a fourth round rookie. One guy's Tevin fucking Coleman. And one guy is fast and catches passes. We don't know who's the Gallman. It's ambiguous. Mm-hmm.
Right, but I'm saying that even in the bowl scenarios where he has like what's the best case for him in that to get like 35%, 40% of the work?
The best case scenario is that he's like in a Mostert type of role. You know, like the best we don't know how these roles are breaking out.
Best case scenario for Ty Johnson is that he's in a Rex Burkhead third down plus goal line role. I think that's what you would want out of Ty Johnson.
I think the upside's higher than that. I think it's higher because we genuinely do not know how this backfield's shaking out.
Yeah, and I mean, who knows? Like, if P. Ryan makes the team, that's not great because then you're talking about four guys maybe playing.
P. Ryan's a classic game day inactive to me. He's been running with the twos. Like, I'm not worried about him. Maybe
Ty Johnson is bigger than I remember. He's 210 pounds. I was thinking he was more like 190. So maybe you are right. Maybe he is more of a Gallman.
I mean, I don't know. That's just the clearest case of like, we could just be totally wrong about who they view as the number one guy.
Yeah. But like, don't you agree? I agree, of course, that there's we don't know anything for sure. But to me, it's one of those scenarios where I think Tevin Coleman is going to get the most touches week one. And then you're going to have the rookie who's going to be bearing down on you to where you're getting like squeezed in both directions. Like I just don't know where the upside ultimately comes from there.
Because Tevin Coleman is Tevin Coleman. I mean, that's the upside. It's like, do you think Tevin Coleman is good versus like Ty Johnson? Ty Johnson to me looks like a really nice fit for this type of one cut system.
Yeah. What if Tevin Coleman is just Todd Gurley and maybe they give him the first carry of the season, but he just is not good or athletic enough to hold it anymore.
And yeah, Michael Carter, I think is probably good, but we don't know that.
That's what I was going to say. Like I'll even grant like Tevin Coleman could just be complete dust. I still think Carter's then getting the next crack at things there.
Yeah. I think Carter's but the market does too. You know, and so Carter's somewhat expensive and Ty Johnson's free. And Coleman is no longer free because Leone has been talking him up so much. So you're just like, you're getting the cheapest guy in an ambiguous backfield in a system that has generally produced a lot of running back points. He's the most athletic guy. He's a pass catcher. And it's an offense that I think could be better than people think. So it's just like, he's such a layup right now.
Yeah.
Should we do a little bit of Sean Siegel's favorite activity and do a little bit of reverse engineering our Scott Fishbowl drafts?
Let's do it.
So, and again, this is literally, I mean, this is practice ADP, right? So there are going to be differences between Kevin's ADP here and what actually happens. But just looking at a couple guys who go like round 15 or later, at quarterback, the most interesting reverse engineer name is Jimmy Garoppolo. It's got to be because I assume that we are all of the opinion that Garoppolo is going to start the season, that the 49ers are good. And I know the Dolphins did it last year where they were in the playoffs and they benched Fitzpatrick for Tua. I feel like if they're 6-2 or whatever, or what if they're undefeated heading into their week 6 bye, are they really benching Garoppolo at that point for Trey Lance?
Garoppolo's going ahead of Rondale Moore. Like they're still.
Yeah. I mean, I'm taking Rondale Moore. I'm for sure taking, like, that's a reverse engineering pick. Like, it's like when we took Visca last year. It's like, lock that in.
Well, that's, and this is was going back to just talking about the overall QB strat of why I think just doing two QBs and then stopping is the way to go. Because you don't want to be taking Jimmy Graham over Rondale Moore. Like, you just don't.
You mean Jimmy Garoppolo?
Jimmy Garoppolo.
Sorry, yeah. Or Jimmy Graham.
Or Jimmy Graham.
For that matter.
if we are, and I'm thinking about maybe going really light on tight end and just not trying to win that position. Gerald Everett, 175 overall, tight end 26.
I love that.
Yeah, he feels like a guy who could catch 60 passes, which is pretty big.
And if you think about, and knowing some of those ADPs like that, it does make me less inclined to maybe force the issue at that, what was it for us here, Pat, at pick, 36 and 37, knowing that you can get some of those tight ends later. Like, I don't know, to be able to get like a DK Metcalf and AJ Brown, like at that spot in the draft, and then try to piece it together at tight end later. I don't know. That's tough.
Jordan Akins, tight end 42.
That's your guy.
ADP of 226.6. He's going after N'Keal Harry. He's going after N'Keal Harry. It's absurd. He's a starting tight end. The 2v2 of like Akins and, a stud wide receiver versus going with the tight end and whatever crap.
Let me bubble burst you there.
Okay.
I think at that point in your draft, given that we are about 65 days away from the season starting, I think you would much rather have that roster spot be Elijah Mitchell, Ty Johnson, Darrell Williams, like a guy who appreciates with, because Jordan Akins does not appreciate with an injury. They could cut every other tight end in their roster. He could be the only tight end on the Houston Texans, and his ADP
could move
would
him
not
to quarterback
change.
And his ADP wouldn't go. That's a good point, but not every one of your picks late needs to be that profile of guy. Like the fact that I know I have a backstop of Jordan Akins, that allows me to draft tight end differently and not reach for the middle class guys. And then I still have plenty of dart throws that I'm going to be spending as well. So like I wouldn't go robust tight end dart throw and take Akins and Ertz and Cook. I wouldn't not leave myself enough ammo to grab some of those running back guys, but I don't think it's bad to spend a late round pick, a last round pick on a starting NFL tight end in a super tight end premium league.
I don't think it's bad, but I'm just thinking in terms of reverse engineering, that means that I'm going to be comfortable skipping on some running backs where like premium wide receivers are still going. So for example, where Damian Harris goes, maybe you can take Devonta Smith. This actually, listen to this, Pat, this might be the one league where we can take Devonta Smith and not hate it. Like this could be place where he doesn't end our season.
This is where we get the Devonta Smith exposure.
This is where we get it because listen, he goes as the wide receiver 38, but this is in a range where we should be done at quarterback, right? Zach Wilson is off the board and you're looking at your Sam Darnold types. This could be the league. The problem is LaVisca will probably be there at the same point, but this could be the league where we take Devonta Smith.
No, he's going ahead of LaVisca. There's no chance.
Yeah, there's no chance. I was trying to probably take him.
I am so little Devonta Smith, man. If he becomes like
none.
A third round pick next year, I guess I just lost this year.
That's how I am. Devonta Smith can ruin my whole season.
His ADP is not even close to reasonable. Like,
he's
what,
more expensive
what is,
than CeeDee Lamb was last year. Give me a break.
Who is driving this though? My question is like, who is driving this? What big fantasy site is touting this? Like what? Cause I mean, Ruggs were the first wide receiver who went last year. Questionable target allocation, questionable. I guess maybe it was literally just because Devonta Smith won the Heisman last year. Is that the reasoning?
Everyone's like 100% sure that he's going to translate very quickly to the NFL, and they're drafting accordingly.
Dude, it's the perfect storm, right? Of the Heisman guy who crushed under the limelight, highly drafted, and people are so down on Rager. Everyone got burned by him so much, ourselves included, that they're just all like, oh my God, it's just he's waltzing into.
But isn't Rager busting kind of an indictment of Smith's situation though? Like shouldn't you be like, well, Rager was super shitty in this same situation?
Oh, trust me, I am much on I love Rager at his cost compared to Smith. I'm just justifying why the market has found themselves here. And I think there's also, we've just seen the tendency. We've seen these rookie wide receivers smash. We see how aggressive Ja'Marr Chase is being drafted. People think that they're getting the next wide receiver one. And just because of that draft capital and him performing under the bright lights.
But it's total, it's like the wrong thing. So that rookie article, right? It's like, even the guys who have big roles for rookies still don't actually have big roles for veteran NFL wide receivers. So if you're drafting him because he's like going to get all the targets, like he's not because he's not going to run 40 routes per game the way like a veteran stud would, who's actually getting all the targets. So you should be putting more focus on what is this Eagles offense actually going to look like? Is this an offense that you want to invest in? Is it going to produce efficient wide receivers? Like, I think it can, but I want to make that bet at the cost where Rager's going, not where Smith's going, you know? And like, I get the Ja'Marr Chase stuff so much more because there I'm like, you know what? This offense could be really, really good. This offense could be one where everyone's playing hyper efficiently.
And Burrow isn't going to be taking off and running near as much as Jalen Hurts. And I think you can still make arguments that it's hard for me to envision Devonta Smith like pulling away from both Goddard and Rager in target. Like, obviously, could he leave the team in target? Sure. But to where that gap is justified, I don't know. I think that's a tough sell for him to come in right away and just be a, what would it be, like a 27, 28% target share kind of guy?
That's not happening.
Yeah.
And he could get all there. Right. He could get there in year two and year three, but I'm very, very willing to bet against it this year.
All right. Tyler Higbee, tight end 13, min of 80, max of 164 on average, 123. So that's like your 11th round pick. That feels like a spot. And I had Higbee last year and I kept starting him. I was actually starting him over Logan Thomas, even though Tyler Higbee continually did nothing. And Logan Thomas was just 4 for 40 every week because of that stupid 3-touchdown game that Higbee had.
Wait, wasn't Higbee the guy we were talking about a ton last year during the Fishbowl, or was that 2 years ago?
I think it was last year because I was.
I think we all liked him. I think and we all liked him, and then you and I really. No,
you
liked
guys were
Gesicki.
Making fun of me for Higbee last
we
year.
We were making.
Which you were correct about.
Oh, we were making fun of you, and then I took him in this. Yeah, that is what happened.
That's normally what happens. We all make fun of each other, then just do the thing we were making fun of.
Yeah.
No, he was the. Because last year you were kind of pounding the drum for him being like the mega tight end value, I think was what it was.
Yeah.
And this year it actually looks like he is the tight end value.
Yeah, I'm going back to the well. On Tyler Higbee for sure.
Well, I mean, we just have so many. I mean, new quarterback, no Gerald Everett. Like there's so many things now, and now he's cheaper than he was last year.
Yeah, the elusive year six breakout from Tyler Higbee.
He broke out in year four.
I mean, so there is some huge sticker shock looking at these average draft positions after doing all the underdog drafts. Like, for example, Jared Goff and Michael Gallup have equivalent average draft positions.
Yeah, that's why you're done before Goff. Like, you cannot be drafting Jared Goff.
Yeah.
AJ Dillon, RB40, 130th overall. I think he's a really good zero RB target if you are going in that. It's, I guess what I'm seeing looking at this ADP is what Pete literally says every episode about every 6 minutes on Ship Chasing, is that once you get into the double digit rounds, there is a palatable running back that you feel comfortable taking, and you lose that at wide receiver.
That's more of a best ball thing than a Ship Chasing thing.
He just said that on his best ball show. That's why you're the double header, the double header revenge.
AJ Dillon will be, I think AJ Dillon, I love all those guys, the Pollard, Dillon, Henderson. I mean, those are the guys that can win you the fishbowl, you know, through the fantasy playoffs, no doubt.
And James
Pollard is, I don't even want to do this, but he's kind of a roster clogger here because what you start 11 positions. Is that right? You start 11 and you have a 20 man roster.
I believe that's correct.
So he is just a guy who you'll never cut. If you draft Tony Pollard, you're never cutting him. Like, just get that in your head right now, because you'll say, well, what if, you know, I cut him and bang, Zeke gets hurt. Like, you'll never cut him. But you also probably, like, maybe there will be weeks where he'll be startable. Maybe he'll play more snaps than we are anticipating. Like, of course I like Pollard, but Pollard is kind of the sort of guy that does lead you into making tough decisions, and you might have to cut other guys you don't love in this format because of bye weeks and because of injuries. Like, if you run up into a bye week thing and your second round pick is also injured, like, you just get yourself into a weird spot.
Yeah, I still do think, like, I think zero RB builds can carry you a long way, but I do think, like, you want to hammer RB play, you know, for those,
yes,
for those championship rounds. And I just think those guys offer that ceiling where you're just not getting it from anywhere else in the draft.
I do struggle with Pollard because I think he might be a trap, and Zeke can also be a trap and still have Pollard be a trap, because my concern is that Zeke gets all the passing down snaps, and a lot of those snaps he's like pass blocking.
I mean, I think that we should anticipate that. I think that we should legitimately anticipate that.
All right. So then what is Pollard? He's like mixing in.
We had this conversation 72 hours ago. He is Ben Tate. He's the highest upside handcuff with, you could start him and maybe get a touchdown some weeks. Like, that's literally what he is.
And see, I don't think that, like, AJ Dillon has like a legitimate carved out role.
He's going to get 10 touches a game.
Yeah, yeah. But if Jordan Love is the quarterback, those are not touches you want.
I mean, who maybe Love's a little better. I mean, if he's running a lot, doesn't that traditionally open up some more running back lanes too?
But AJ Dillon would be the guy losing like the third and one carries and like the goal to go stuff. You would think.
I don't think they're going to use Love as a goal to go guy. I mean, he's not Josh Allen.
That's the thesis, but he sucks is the problem. Jordan Love is just no good.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, the Jordan Love thing isn't great, but Dillon is still a different type of guy where he's going to have a role. I also think Henderson, the upside play is that he is a committee back who also has contingent value. I think most likely scenario it's Akers. They basically use him as a workhorse, but there's a path to Henderson. It's kind of like with Pollard last year. Maybe we were talking ourselves a little bit too much into him having like some standalone value. But don't you think Henderson has a much better chance of standalone value than Pollard?
Yes, Henderson I think has more standalone. Yeah.
It's more ambiguous about how they're going to use the guys.
It is more ambiguous. Yeah, because we have not seen Henderson play without Malcolm Brown, right?
Right.
I mean, and I know this is irrelevant to the conversation, but I mean, if the Cowboys were doing things optimally, you'd have Zeke as the early down back, and you would be having Pollard like in the Nyheim Hines role, like,
yeah,
throughout the,
well,
like,
this is why I won't touch Zeke.
Right.
Yeah. I mean,
so, yeah, it's
you,
like,
wait,
so
you really are not drafting Zeke at all, Pat? I'm not,
I mean, I basically got talked, Leone talked me into him when his ADP was like the 202. But now he's like an early first round pick, and I just
the
am
buzz
not
is
drafting
just,
him at all.
We started our main event drafts, and you can see some of the boards that are getting posted. I mean, he's like a locked and loaded 1-4, 1-5. Once Hard Knocks hits, like, I won't be surprised to see him as the 1-3 after McCaffrey and Cook.
He's apparently in great
situation
shape.
Based. Yeah, great.
The article by his trainer. I did actually read that one in. You guys.
Wow, paywall P.
No, Pat gave me a month free sub. He gifted Influencer Athletic over here. Yeah,
amazing.
So been enjoying it.
I mean, you're yeah, welcome, like I'm just continuing to scan through ADP, and the clearest thing ever is exactly what Pat was saying. Like, I'm just looking at like where like Jared Goff goes, where Jameis Winston goes, where Taysom Hill goes, where Cam Newton goes. Like, people will be selecting Cam Newton over Elijah Moore if this ADP holds, which is just like, you cannot possibly win the overall tournament making those decisions.
No,
exactly. Because like, you need to hit on guys, like, you're mining for guys who can smash. Cam Newton's not that guy. You're just so much better off getting the quarterback.
My room is now through 11 picks, and the only skill position players to go were Kelce, Cook, and CMC. Tom Brady just went 11th overall, which I don't know. I mean, that is the point where I'm like, you know, I might take Tyreek Hill over him, or I might take Diggs over him.
Over who?
Over Tom Brady, because Brady is going to throw. I mean, if Brady throws 40 touchdown passes, because he's not going to run. Like, the thing about the running quarterbacks is they negate all of their incompletions, right? So like 40 rushing yards takes care of your negative points from your completions, basically.
Yeah.
How did Brady score in this last year?
He was pretty good, I think.
I mean, he is He is good for this format, but
because he gets the completions, he doesn't have incompletions.
Yeah, here I will look at the scoring from last year and figure it out.
Looks like he was 12th in scoring with an average of 22.8 points.
That's better than I thought, honestly.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Like he was pretty close to Lamar and Herbert.
That's very pricey, man. I mean, that's real pricey.
Yeah.
It is.
I mean, it is crazy how many points quarterbacks scored. Like Josh Allen, Aaron Rodgers, and Mahomes and Kyler all had over 400. And the only skill position players who got close were Kelsey, Kamara, and Dalvin Cook and Derrick Henry. And then all the other skill position players were under 300 points. So like losing by like 100 points to the top quarterbacks over the season, which is, that's really gnarly.
You can't get locked out at quarterback. You really can't.
Yeah, you really can't.
Which maybe
I will.
You're
just like, so screwed.
Yeah, I'm taking the risk that I'll get locked out of quarterback here with this build. But
I can't. I'm glad that we came full circle and Pat realizing he should have taken Mahomes.
No, I still would have taken McCaffrey. Like, I think McCaffrey's the correct pick in this, like, GPP structure. You have to give yourself a chance to get the quarterbacks plus McCaffrey. It's such a hammer. But you could lose by like round four. You could be like, I'm dead.
Yeah. If your room goes the wrong way, you're flipped. Yeah.
I still think McCaffrey's the play though.
I mean, the thing you might have to do actually, because you have such a positional advantage at running back, is you might actually have to take three quarterbacks in the first five rounds, with one of them being Lance or Fields, and just saying, I have such an advantage at running back, I can start Naheem Hines at run. I can, you know, if I got to start,
you don't want to be using
Wilkins.
That. It's the same thing of like, you can't be using, if you go a Lance and a third, you're potentially using two top seven picks on guys that aren't going to be in your starting lineup.
You're right. What I was thinking actually was that I would go like, what if I go Fields, just bet on this Dalton plan to blow up 3-4 weeks in, which we know it will. And McCaffrey's my second quarterback until then. And I just ride it out. Like I don't even take a third quarterback necessarily.
Now the other thing is though, is that there is, because of the way the scoring is cumulative into the playoffs, there is a huge edge in having the bye week, because your team can just axed. Your team can be axed in the playoffs so easily. It's crazy how it works.
Yeah,
that's true. Yeah. This wouldn't be an optimal build. This is a, my league sniffed out what
survive
I'm trying
in
to
advance
do and just killed
yeah.
me. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It looks like my league is going, my league is going so crazy on quarterbacks that I actually, man, I don't know. I might be playing it fast and loose with quarterback stuff, because it's looking like all of the good quarterbacks are going to be gone by the time I get up at 209.
It's the same concept that we talk about with zero RB, in that the people in the back half of the first round are chasing those bell cow running back points with less, you know, not as good a bets. It's the same thing's going to happen here with quarterback. Everyone's chasing that because of this fear that they're not. And we're going to be able to really take advantage of that with some of our picks, because some insane value is going to fall to us and we're not going to be in a QB crunch.
You guys are going to be able to take advantage of it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that was kind of the whole thought process.
So let me throw this to you, Pat. Would you rather have Joe Burrow and Christian McCaffrey, or Kyler Murray and Ezekiel Elliott?
Joe Burrow and Christian McCaffrey.
See, I think that's wrong.
Christian McCaffrey stays healthy, he's going to score like Mahomes. If Zeke stays healthy, he might score like friggin' Jared Goff. He's got a better running back behind him. Like, the downside risk on this is it's just so much higher with Zeke. I can't get on board with Zeke.
I just, where I have gotten to is, if you are going to be a running backs are largely a function of the offense that they're in type thing. It's like, I got to stop hating on Zeke, because I am so certain the Cowboys are going to score so many points that I just got to let Zeke. I just got to take him,
because
I'm so confident.
With where Zeke is going now, I mean, he's so expensive now. You're betting on a smart, high scoring offense to do something suboptimal for an entire season. I think Pollard's a better running back, or at least better to the point where they should basically be in a 50-50 split. And so for them not to be doing that, you're just hoping they do something dumb, which I don't want to be doing.
Pete, anything interesting in your draft yet? Has anyone made a shocker?
No, we're at a stall. Mahomes, Kyler, McCaffrey, and we're waiting on Eric Balkman over at the FFPC. I assume he's having a long brunch right now. I don't even know, probably out on his farm. So nothing happening.
So in mine, Michael Florio from NFL.com just picked on the turn, and he just double tapped Derrick Henry, Darren Waller. So he is going to be, which gives him, you know, a running back one and maybe the second or third best tight end. And obviously Waller is going to eat receptions, which is huge in this format. But
he's also playing for the 301, right? Cause you get the,
so he will have a better quarterback available to him there, I think probably.
So my draft is gone. It went four straight quarterbacks, then Kelsey, then Cook, then Dak Lamar, then Henry, then Herbert, then Kamara. So we're waiting here now for the 112-201 turn. I feel okay about this.
Yeah, I think you should. I think I am going to try and take George Kittle at the 209 if he's there.
I like that. We just took Kittle at the 202 in our main event draft.
I don't know, but then I am going to – my 309 at quarter – so 309 at quarterback, that would be like pick 34, 35. So then I'm – oh, man, then I'm really – yeah, I can't do that. I got to take another quarterback because then it's like I have Kirk Cousins as my second quarterback.
At 309, you think it's as bad as Cousins?
I know it is. I'm looking at ADP right now. Jalen Hurts is the quarterback 13 – at pick 30, then the next quarterback that goes is Kirk Cousins, QB 14. That's the tier break. That's the tier break from Hurts to Cousins. That's where it goes.
I mean, Lawrence is behind that. I'd be very comfortable.
Yeah, I like Lawrence. That you make a good point. Lawrence is a pretty good second quarterback.
And then you're done.
And then I'm done. Yeah, it's just this is I love Scott for putting this together. I love the positional questions you have to ask yourself. Like no other draft has me thinking this deeply about. Like I'm just am auto-botting, like, oh, this guy's six picks past ADP. I'm just gonna take him. And like we go into these main events knowing we're just gonna take wide receivers until we vomit. And like, I don't know, but you can't really do that here. Though the ability to start up to six wide receivers, seven if you disregard the super flex, is very fun.
Yeah, it is. I like those builds. I think Pat's point is definitely correct. If you're able to bank the quarterbacks late and then have the McCaffrey hammer, you are going to be ahead. And I think with our thing, I am completely comfortable going with a zero RB build and with the same thought process. I'm not going to bank a McCaffrey level producer, but I could bank a top five running back producer, and that's the bet I'm going to try to make.
Right, which I think that's obviously a sharp build.
I don't imagine myself taking a running back in the first six rounds, probably.
Yeah,
you're going to be staring at like the studs of stud wide receivers. I mean, it's going to be heaven if you're okay taking wide receivers there.
Yeah, like people are going to be doing things like because their rosters are going to feel thin. They're going to be doing things like taking DeAndre Swift over DeAndre Hopkins because of the way it breaks out. Like that will happen in some of these drafts because people get so panicky about not having that RB position filled.
Imagine taking DeAndre Swift over a wide receiver.
Buddy, we took him over like freaking Odell Beckham or something, like the way your stupid streams go. don't be like that.
They are so stupid.
They are.
So just the 112-201 just went. I want to get your thoughts on this construction. Jason Sarney of Fantasy Football Astronauts went George Kittle and Darren Waller.
It's pretty interesting because if Kittle has a 17 game healthy season and Trey Lance is as good as we think he is, Kittle has access to very easily being a top 12 player overall, but also that's a unique roster construction. Once you get into the Scott Fishbowl playoffs, my guess is not very many teams will have those two players, like probably less than 10 even. And kind of fucks your league mates too. Mm-hmm. It pushes tight ends up a little bit and will leave you some interesting stuff later.
And this is like the classic, you know, Scott Fishbowl in a GPP logic, but like traditionally you probably wouldn't want to do that. Let's just say it was a 12 team league with this exact same scoring settings, but not trying to win a massive tournament. Like we just know that tight ends are more volatile. They get injured. There's just more that can go wrong for them. And that I'd want to just make a bet on one of them. But in this format, trying to get first place, if you do get those two elite level outcomes and they, you know, perform as if they are being drafted, you know, with this capital, like that's going to be a smash for you, a huge smash.
Yeah. Yeah. And for like the playoff weeks to have both those guys, you can pretty easily imagine them all, you know, having spike weeks throughout. And it's just like the fact that you had both because of how high the tight end scoring is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that going to end up being a unique construction or will most drafters at the turn have that available to them?
I think Waller will have an average draft position ahead of the 112, to be honest.
But yeah. Kittle is later. Kittle's like in more in the mid second. So you don't have to have the 1-2 spot. Like you could probably do this out of the 108, 109.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
I still think it will just be something that most people want to have a quarterback or they see Ezekiel Elliott there and like, shit, I got to take Ezekiel Elliott or Derrick Henry or whatever. And, you know, another thing is that the guys who really break out, right? So like Diggs and James Robinson were those guys last year. Like in, you get into the championship rounds of Underdog or you get in the championship rounds of FFPC or you get in the championship rounds of Scott Fishbowl, you're going to have a lot of overlap on breakout players, guys who way out earned their value spot. So there is a little bit of extra value in just having weird constructions to begin with, because your Diggs's, your James Robinson's, your James Connors from the year Le'Veon Bell didn't play for the Steelers, like all those things, like those guys are those. There's going to be a heavy confluence of certain types of players amongst the championship rounds.
It is also an interesting way to play the third round reversal, right? Because you're you probably would never want to do this if you didn't have the third round reversal, but to get that better third round pick, then, you know, I think you can talk yourself a little bit more into this. You know, your quarterback opportunity cost is a little lower, I guess, kind of what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's right. All right. I mean, do we have any other, I think our biggest takeaways are don't get left holding the bag at quarterback. Zero running back continue. Like this is almost the perfect format for it. And use the back end of your roster spot with guys you feel comfortable cutting so that you can fab big running swings. Backs the week before the season. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny because like this scoring is not ideal for zero running back, but then the ADP always overcorrects. Like
that's what it is. Yeah. Because I was having that conversation with Kevin last night and he was like, well, you know, the running back's kind of in these ranges score. And I'm like, yeah, but it's that you are on the clock and you're choosing between, let's see here. Let me find a good example. Melvin Gordon and DJ Shark go back to back in ADP.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So it's just like, sure. I mean, maybe, but like I could never in my life take Melvin Gordon there. I just simply couldn't do it.
No. And projected points aren't points.
True. Yeah, very true.
And it does end up, like usual with zero RB, and ends up being a pretty unique construction. Like we have our RotoViz cohorts where you'll see them hammering it, a few other people, but for the large part, people aren't going to be doing this.
Right.
Yeah. They're, I wonder if, not,
you know,
I wonder if Amico will wait until the third round or the 13th round to take a running back and be in first place for the regular season again.
That was sick.
You love to see it.
You do. You love this. I mean, hey, we know wide receivers score more points and they get hurt less often, but I don't know. What should Pete, can you give us a full terminology for this strategy that we can put on a t-shirt?
Which we call this?
Yeah.
The same shirt that we're doing. It's where you take an elite quarterback or Christian McCaffrey 101, and then you make the best possible decisions at all of your other picks while generally prioritizing wide receivers over the running backs and along the way taking pit stops for tight end and QB values, but probably not a ton because you do just want to not waste a ton of roster spots at that position. And then you want to grab a bunch of running backs late and hope training camp news breaks in your favor and you have this year's James Robinson. And then you just have to be willing to post that screenshot on Twitter from the SFB ADHD app and hope that it looks vaguely pretty, because otherwise people hate looking at rosters like this.
Pretty good. I feel like I also feel like we didn't close the loop on stacking enough, and I wanted to come back to this point that I view stacking as being very important here, for mostly for the playoff weeks, but then also that because this scoring rewards competent offenses in that you get points for completed passes and you get points for first downs, that like a week where the team you stack scores 42 points or whatever, like you are blowing your competition away, and there is a reward for 4 points in your lineup in that your cumulative regular season score impacts your playoff performance. And so having those spiked weeks come together in your rosters at the same time is super valuable. So I am a strong advocate for stacking in this, even more so than in FFPC stuff.
And it's kind of easier because, like, as long as you get the good quarterbacks, then all the wide receivers are so cheap that you can kind of figure out how to stack them together. Like, I'm looking at where I can get Chase. He's at ADP 72. Higgins is in the 80s, 85. Boyd is going after pick 100. So, you know, if you're like me and you took McCaffrey and now you got your bet on Burrow, which is a little suboptimal, I really like stacking that because I'm already putting my eggs in the Burrow has a breakout season basket.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's accurate.
Yep. Yeah. Again, all right. I think in this format too, it's you're just making the bet on the team. And I think being willing to stack even untraditionally, grab two wide receivers, grab the running back, wide receiver, like I think you're hoping that the team performs beyond their expectation.
Yeah. All right. Promote the streams and promote ship chasing, Pete.
Yeah, man. We're ship chasing. We're looking forward to it. We started our main event, slow draft. We're doing minisodes on every pick for our YouTube members in video form. And then the audio will be up on a slight delay. So if you're one of those sickos that want it right away, you can become a member. And yeah, we're going to be drafting, talking strategy every Wednesday night. And then once, you know, August hits, we already got to talk to you about doing our main event draft. I mean, we're going to be drafting a ton. And yeah. And then I'm just doing the best ball drafts every Monday. You guys were just on with me. If you want to check that out on my YouTube channel.
All right. NBC Sports Edge, Pat.
Yeah. I'm going to be starting a Tuesday edition of A Good Football Show that I'll be hosting. And the first one that we're kicking off there, 2:30 Eastern, is with Davis. We're bringing him on to talk the DraftKings fantasy football, best ball, whatever it's called, their tournament.
It's unbelievable.
And it's super
these
soft,
drafts.
Apparently. So
yeah, it's unbelievable.
I've done one. Yeah. I need to do more, and then I'm gonna.
And you probably loved your team. You were probably looking at it like, I can't believe I've been drafting on Underdog against people who are drafting off my rankings as opposed to drafting here.
Also, speaking of Underdog, the breaking news during this recording, they launched the puppy, the $5 tournament. No slow drafts for that one, but it's an attainable 150 max if you have 150 hours. And, you know, whatever that math is.
I'm going to be doing so, I'm going to be locked in, dude. I've been waiting for this. Like, it's not that I wasn't doing the 25s, but now that there's fives, like I can do like three at one time. Like I can just blasting these off.
Yeah. I was just going to say, we should try to do some streams where we're like eight tabling bubble drafts.
Dude, like that's just my life. Like I am so on board for this. Like I'm gonna go to the gym, get on the Stairmaster, and just click, click, click. Like, it's gonna be so good.
Dude, that would be such a good bit of like max entering the bubble like within like 3 days.
just like entering every bubble draft that opens, like set the world record for most fantasy football picks made in 24 hours.
Yeah. Like with my slow drafts for Best Ball Mania, like I'm being very thoughtful, I'm looking through a lot of different factors, but with the $5 puppy one, I'll just be like, you know in the car while I'm getting gas, might as well hop in one right here, you know. Just whatever, just we got to max this one way or the other.
Yeah. All right, well, everyone, of course, thanks Scott Fish for putting this event on. Thank you, Josh,
one of the best times ADHD. Of the year.
Yeah, thank you Josh for setting up the app. Thank you, Kevin, for organizing the mock drafts and giving us some ADP to talk about, because without the ADP, who knows what we would have talked about.
We'd be bullshitting even more than we usually do.
Yeah, it would be unbelievable. Yeah, of course, everyone, fantasycares.net, if you want to support the cause. And also the SFB Podathon, I think, starts soon and is going to be going on. I'm going to be on that tomorrow night. Peter, you going on?
Yeah, Pat and I are actually going to be on at 3 today. So, man, if I think it'll be our fourth podcast.
Mother
today,
of God.
It's just like,
that's not a joke. Literally our fourth podcast that we'll
guys, we are getting into the greatest time of the year. No one's gotten injured yet. All your teams look amazing. You're worried about your Cornell Powell versus Byron Pringle exposure. It is so beautiful.
Is it week 17 yet?
No, ideally you just fall asleep Thursday night, week one, and then you wake up in week 17 to find out how much money you made. That'd be the ideal world.
I just want to get to the bye weeks because the matchups column is pretty exhausting.
Amazing. I mean, I was talking to Rich Rebar and he made that point to me that there are less mega bye weeks. I think there are maybe none or only one with six teams on bye. So it's like, you have another full week of work and more work during like the meat of the season because not as many teams are on bye. So it's just an amazing time to be a fantasy football content creator.
It is.
Great season to go full time, Pat. We'll see.
I really started it at the right time. As the old school content creators. It's like World War I and I'm like a fresh troop. I'm seeing everyone come back.
Yeah, you're like headed into the battle of the Somme or the whatever. Somme.
Yeah, yeah. I'm headed into the Somme and I'm like,
oh,
I'm ready to fight for England. All right, I got to get out. I need a little bit of a break from Pat here. I get about an hour.
See you at 3.
All right, everyone. We'll see you back later this week.